Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Before we begin, we would like to thank Six Point Builders for their support of our show. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area.
Another episode of Revolution Recap, part of the Believe Network. We're coming to you after the New England Revolution finally picked up the first win of the season, first MLS win of the season, a 1-0 home victory over Charlotte FC. I'm Sean Donahue, joined today by Thomas Pinzoni, who for the first time since joining the show gets to talk about an MLS win. Tom, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going pretty good. It's nice to finally see them pick up 3 points and be scheduled to come on the show to talk about it. The feeling that I had leaving the stadium last night, to be honest, was marginally better than the previous couple games that we've been to so far. But, we were promised a win, and a win we had.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to promise a win every week now. Is that it worked? it doesn't matter how they got there. They got the 3 points, but there is a lot to, I think, analyze from this game because, like you alluded to, wasn't exactly a clean performance. We left this game with as many questions as we had answers. So I don't know that anyone's overly relieved with the performance, even if they are relieved with 3 points. But before we jump into it, I want to quickly mention our sponsor, BetOnline. It's down to the final four teams. BetOnline has been your tournament bracket headquarters all March long. And now that we're almost down to the finals, well, we are down to the finals, actually. We've still got a lot more in store. MLB is here. NBA, NHL players are around the corner. Of course, you can always bet on MLS if you're crazy. And as always, BetOnline is the number one source for your summer sports wagering. Head to BetOnline today to stay updated on all the action. Remember to use promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Let's jump right into our key takeaways, which are brought to you by our friends at the Rebellion Supporters Group. Be sure to check them out on Twitter at AnyRebellion and on their website, anyrebellion.org. Tom, you kind of alluded to not being completely thrilled with the performance, even if you're happy with 3 points, but what is your takeaway from this one?
My key takeaway is, they had to for the second home game in a row, absolutely had to get a win and 3 points. And we got to the point where it was just like any possible way that you can make that happen, you need to make it happen. And I think that is the definition of what they did. I mean, they did the absolute bare minimum that you can do and expect to come away with 3 points, especially at home. They're typically a very strong team at home. MLS teams in general are very strong at home. And, this was not a strong performance. This is not the type of performance that is going to deliver, the number of points that they had from home games. Even last season, they had 40 points in 17 home games. I mean, they are a long, long way away from playing at home in a way that is gonna make that happen. So yeah, 3 points, great. But it's certainly not going to be a type of performance that is going to get you 3 points more often than not going forward.
Yeah, it was interesting after the game hearing Caleb Porter talk. He's talked earlier in the season about how the Revs haven't really had breaks go their way in games, and today he admitted that they certainly did have breaks go their way in this one. So I was glad to at least hear him admit that, because you look at the first 15 minutes of this game, the team could have been down 2-0, right? There was that giveaway that Harks had, there was that terrible giveaway that Henrik Ravas had in the 7th minute, where he tried to dribble his way out of the box and just had a bad touch and turned it over. I don't know how Charlotte didn't score there. They had an open net to shoot on and just sent it wide. That was kind of an embarrassing play all around. But I think the Revs were lucky not to be down at least a goal 15 minutes in. And then, they kind of found their way into the game in the first half. They played pretty well for a half hour. They had some chances. Rioni had a few chances, probably should have put one away. And then Carles Gil got a rebound that he put away. It seems like bad rebounds from goalkeepers in the rain, and one of the Nacho Hill brothers putting them away is a good winning strategy for the Revs. But then we saw the second half, and the Revs generated just about zero offense. They had one shot in the 50th minute in the entire second half. You're happy with 3 points because, they haven't had it this season, but it wasn't a game that you left feeling great, right?
No. And, you know, the thing is, you talk about luck going your way as well. They finally came across a team that is less capable of making things happen in front of goal than they are. I mean, that's really the bottom line. I mean, Charlotte coming into this game had 6 goals in 6 games, and you could see why. You know, I mean, even that, you know, Robinson, you had a mistake there with the ball, which, you know, look, I know it looks bad when the goalkeeper does it, but every goalkeeper is going to have that happen at some point. Every outfield player, you know, certainly on this team has had it happen at least once already this season themselves. But the fact that Charlotte wasn't able to capitalize on that, they had some, you know, they had a couple other moments where they got the ball in the threatening areas. You know, so that's really probably the biggest luck going their way, is they came across someone else that doesn't really know how to score goals, and, you know, they came out and they won 1-0. So I don't know, not a ton of pause. But like you said, I mean, they played well for a half an hour. Okay. I mean, playing well for a half an hour, maybe that gets you a point. Maybe that gets you an occasional win on the road. But playing well for a half an hour at home, you know, people are certainly going to be expecting, you know, a lot more than that. And I thought the turnout, I mean, I actually went to this game. I have avoided poor weather games at this point in the season, but we decided to give it a go. We didn't realize that the weather was going to be that bad. But it was a decent crowd. And, you know, yeah, some people were really happy at the end of the game, but, you know, my wife and I, as soon as the whistle blew, it's like, all right, that's it. Let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It was a terrible weather game. There was a decent turnout, I think, considering how bad it was. The forecast was nowhere. We usually get forecasts that are much worse than the weather. This time was a case where the forecast was nowhere near as bad as what the weather turned out to be. But yeah, it was, I don't know, I'm sure I was at the game. I was in the press box out of the rain. Didn't get to experience that, but I'm sure sitting through that second half and watching them kind of hang on for dear life for the last 10, 15 minutes while sitting in the cold rain, wasn't ideal. But yeah, my takeaway from this one is actually that the Revs need to find a way, and it's not necessarily a new takeaway, but the Revs need to stop trying so hard to play out of the back. And I think you saw that in the first 15 minutes, that they were really trying hard to just pass the ball around the back and get something going forward. I think Porter even said after the game that, you know, what we saw in the first 15 minutes is not what we're trying to do. We're actually trying to build an attack, not just play around the back. But I'm shocked they kind of started the game the way they did when, you know, they actually had some time to you know, figure things out going into this game. They had the 10 days off before the Club America game, and they had some days off here to get ready for this. And they absolutely needed to win this game, and they came out very sluggish and came out, you know, very sloppy. And maybe the fact that they needed to win so bad kind of got into their heads, but just the playing out of the back, it doesn't seem like this team is built for that. And, you know, it was interesting hearing the radio broadcast for this one with Brad Feldman and Charlie Davies. Charlie Davies kept talking about Henry Kessler and how Henry Kessler needs to stop trying to play college soccer and learn to play professional soccer, because Kessler kept, every time they were trying to do something, he would put his head down and kind of boot the ball long, which really doesn't fit with what the rest of the team was trying to do. So it just seems like a bunch of disjointed pieces back there that, you know, we were able to see in the past with Bruce Arena, that they're able to play in transition, they're able to counterattack, but they're not really a team that, you know, has the right pieces, I think, to kind of pass around the back and build something going forward. And I think in kind of that 30 minutes where they were playing well, it was more kind of in transition and getting going on the counterattack and creating that way. Because I don't think we really have seen many sequences this year where the Revs have kind of started an attack in the back, passed around a bit, and kind of created something while the other team was able to get set, waiting for the Revs to kind of just build going forward.
Yeah, this is very confusing to me. Porter continues to say things that don't correlate with what is actually happening on the field. Okay, so this is what he said. The first 10 minutes, again, it was more of like, keep the ball and go nowhere. That's not what I want. But then from there, they started playing forward and playing quicker and going to goal. And all of a sudden, our tail went up, which is, I hate when people say that. And we started getting confident. Now, this is the thing I cannot understand. He says, I don't want them playing in this way. I don't want us just kind of knocking the ball around and not really doing anything with it. However, that is what they do, and that's what they've done in every single game so far this season, except when they go on the road. When they go on the road, it's just total chaos. So that's what they're doing. And then he says, well, that's not really what I want them to do. It's like, well, but it's not improving. There's no changes. They come out and they play the same way every single game, and you can see that He's very clearly, visibly frustrated. He's throwing his hands about, throwing a little hissy fit on the sideline when they pass the ball back. It's like, but they're doing that for a reason, because they didn't. This same group of players did not do that last year. So something has changed. Right, we keep talking about how the players haven't changed from one year to the next. The coach has changed. The way that they're playing has changed. So what would be the cause for that? It would have to be the coach. So to me, I feel like there is some sort of major disconnect in what Porter is trying to communicate to the team and what the team is hearing. And so I don't know. Porter strikes me as a very poor communicator, both in that he continues to put his foot in his mouth in press conferences with bus analogies and promising wins and dividing his team up into little groups, publicly trashing his goalkeeper when his backup goalkeeper is clearly not as good as he is. And then, again, this playing style stuff that he keeps talking about. And if you watch his Columbus team, the last year that he was there, year number four, this is how they were playing. They were allergic to counterattacks and knocking the ball around. It's like, so is he seriously going to sit here and tell us for the next 4 years, if he's here that long, we're going to have 4 years of, well, this isn't really how I wanted us to play, but we continue to go out and play it. I mean, it I don't know. There's just a lot. I almost wish I didn't listen to the press conferences, because every time I listen to him talk and watch the team play, I don't see any correlation.
Yeah, I mean, I think the disconnect is he doesn't have the player. I think he wants to play this way, but he wants it to be, you know, moving more up the field and having this possession more in midfield. He doesn't have the players to do it, right? And I think when Curtinoffo and the Revs front office were out looking for a coach, you know, they had a roster that they had already set up, right? Before the coach got here, there was not much opportunity for Caleb Porter to make changes. And I'm sure when they were out interviewing coaches, they said, "Hey, do you think, you know, you can implement a system that works for this roster?" Right. And I'm sure Caleb Porter said, "Oh, sure. I can do something that works for this roster." I think his system doesn't work for this roster. So, you know, maybe if I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt for his comment, he's saying, you know, we do want to keep passing the ball around, but we want to do it further up the field. But they don't have the guys to do that. Right. And you've talked about it before with, you know, Matt Polster being, you know, kind of your central midfielder that isn't great at getting the ball forward necessarily. You know, he's a guy that can pass around the back a little bit, but he's not a guy you necessarily look to kind of spring Carly's heel forward from, especially from a non-transition situation. And I think even Ian Harkes isn't that guy either, you know, as good as he can be for this Revolution team. So if I'm giving Porter the benefit of the doubt, it's that I think he doesn't have the players to do what he wants to do, and he's still trying to do it, which at the end of the day falls back to him. You gotta adapt your system to the players, especially, you know, in a situation he came into where they, you know, the roster was set. So yeah, there's a lot of blame to go around, but if I and giving him the benefit of the doubt for that one particular comment, it's that I think, yes, this is how he wants the team to play, but he wants it to actually have more of a positive outcome in the end. And you're right that, you know, that didn't work for Columbus after 4 years. It did work for them for a couple of years, and it fell apart. But like, having a guy like a Darlington Nagbe in midfield makes a big difference when you're trying to play that way.
Yeah, but this is the thing, though. He keeps playing Polster. Polster has to be – and look, clearly I'm not a fan of Polster, but look – he's the one that almost every single time he gets the ball, he just bounces it back to the guy that gave it to him. So if that's not what Porter wants them to do, but he continues to play the players that do that, that doesn't make sense. Where has Noel Buck gone? Not me personally, but some people think Noel Buck could be a good central midfielder. Okay, well, surely his technique is better than Polster's. So where has he been? Why isn't Kay getting a look in? If Polster's not doing what he wants, which is just bouncing the ball back to the center back that gave it to him, then try someone else out there. But he keeps rolling Polster out there, and he talks about how much he loves him. Anytime anyone asks him a question about Polster, he gets all excited to talk about him again. And then, you know, Kessler, like you said, Kessler is not good with the ball at his feet, yet he continues to play. He started him over Romney. So now you're going to take Kessler, who is painfully right-footed and can't do much of anything with his right foot, and you're going to shift him over to the left? I mean, what did he think was going to happen? You think Kessler was going to go out there and start knocking the ball around with his left foot when he can't do it with his right foot? You know, so like, why is Farrell not getting more of a look in at center back? He's of the four center backs they have, the only one that really even looks to try and thread passes and break lines and put balls into tight areas. He's the only one out of the four that is A, even willing to do it, and B, is the only one who's capable of doing it, yet he finds himself on the bench with, you know, two guys, in particular Kessler and Mensah. Their passing range is about 10 to 15 yards under no pressure, and the guy receiving it can't be under any pressure either. So I don't understand what he expects when he continues to put those types of players out on the field.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying defensively, especially. The only thing I'll kind of disagree with you on is in midfield. I think the reason he keeps putting Polster out there is he doesn't really have good options, right? I think, you know, Nobuck he gave some minutes to this year and he didn't look good. I was someone going into the season that wanted to see Nobuck as a starter. I thought Nobuck last year when he was at his best looked pretty good. I think the Nobuck we've seen this year hasn't been that Nobuck. And I haven't been impressed with him, and maybe part of that's the system too, but I don't think he's looked good in the system when he's gotten a chance. I know you and I disagree on Kay. I'm not a fan of Kay. I think that, you know, he offensively he does offer more than Matt Polster, but I think, you know, as someone that gets frustrated with Polster's turnovers, I think Kay is even another level worse when it comes to the dangerous turnovers that put the team in a bad position. And some of that's because he actually tries stuff going forward, but some of that's also he gets caught on the ball. So I really think the roster is not set up at all for what Caleb Porter's done, and Caleb Porter's failed to adjust. And that's, you know, why we're six games into the MLS season and there's one win. He hasn't figured out how to get the most out of this roster, and I'm not sure that he's going to be able to do that based on what we've seen so far. Defensively, I don't know what he was thinking with that lineup. I don't know why we didn't necessarily see Andrew Farrell in this game. I assume Dave Romney, just because he's played just about every minute of every game, this was just a case of giving him a rest, and probably a well-deserved and well-needed rest. Of course, that didn't last very long when Jonathan Mensah got hurt in the 42nd minute and had to come out. But to me, it's just a bad, you know, and I'll take the hit for it. I thought Porter was an okay hire, but you know, the way the Revs have been trying to adapt to a system just hasn't worked at all. I was wrong. It was not a good hire because he's trying to put, you know, square pegs in round holes, and it's not working.
No, the one thing I think we can all agree on is that he certainly is not getting the most out of this roster. I mean, that's painfully obvious. So whether he, like you said, whether he just really wanted to get back into MLS and was just going to, you know, once he got a feeling from Kurt that, you know, Kurt made it, I'm sure he made it pretty clear that, you know, we really like this roster, you're not going to, in the interview, say, well, actually, if I was going to come in, these 10 guys need to go. But, you know, that's the, because he did say, I mean, he did say, like, you know, he likes the roster, it's a good team, you know, yada, yada, yada. Now he's talking about, you know, he's talking about multiple years down the road, which is that's quite a leap to take when you are the coach of the worst team in the league in a 29-team league. But for him to come out and say stuff like that, like, oh, he's already talking about making changes. And it's like, well, I don't know. If you thought this was a roster that could play in your style 3 months ago, and now all of a sudden they can't, then I don't know why anyone should trust his judgment anyway.
Right. Exactly. And it was funny this game too, where he was like talking about the guys that haven't played and getting to see them against Club America and saying, you know, like you said, like a couple of years down the road that this roster could look a lot differently because he wants to see what these guys can do and stuff like that. And it's, I mean, you look at his success in Portland and his success in Columbus, it came in the first 2 years and then everything went downhill. So I don't know. We'll see how that all plays out. But yeah, we do have a lot of questions. I think that's a good time to jump into them. Our listener mailbag today is brought to you by our friends at Subcheck Law. You can find Subcheck Law's website in our show notes. Tom, we actually got a question at our email address, revolutionrecap@gmail.com. We don't get many, but that is always an option for those of you. In the past, we used to take more questions off of different social media sites. It became too much, so we kind of just stick to X/Twitter. But we always take questions by email, so feel free to send those. And with that in mind, I'll start with Dave Capone's question, which is, now that a third of Cardinalfo's offseason acquisitions, Jonathan Mensah, left injured in the first half, a player who the coach said wouldn't be able to be an MLS starter regularly anymore, I'm in awe of what a terrible offseason this was on every single front, even longer, in fact, since the second Bruce left. Nothing about Anofo's work tells me he's competent enough for this job. I'm wondering why we didn't move past all of his baloney and hire a competent front office director.
Well, I mean, we've kind of gone over this, right? Like, this is just what the Revs, this is just what they do as an organization. You know, they obviously were very happy with Bruce. You know, whatever happened, you know, he resigned. And Brian obviously just decided to keep everybody else that Bruce had brought in, just to kind of keep them all around. We talked about this recently as well. You know, did they do a lot in the offseason? Well, no, they didn't do a lot in the offseason because they couldn't do a lot in the offseason. You know, everyone wants to act like Bruce is the greatest thing that's ever happened to soccer. But, you know, he was given contract extensions to Tommy McNamara. So you want to sit here and talk about why we don't have more options in areas where the team is struggling. Well, that's one of them, because we burned a senior roster spot on Tommy McNamara, who I believe has what, 15 minutes of playing time this season. And he's on decent money too. So he's tying up a spot in the roster, and he's tying up cap space. I've yet to meet anyone that will defend Kurt Anolfo, but that was done when Bruce was in charge. So some of the stuff you can't really put on Anolfo. And I still disagree. Like this is a team that is a playoff capable team, you know, maybe not a high playoff team, but this is a team that has enough talent where they should be competing for a playoff spot with the roster that they have. And even just an average competent MLS coach should be able to guide this team to at least, you know, seventh or eighth place. And they're in dead last, even with the win yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot you can blame on Bruce for this roster situation, for sure. I talked about that before. I agree with you. There's a lot of guys that he signed to multi-year contracts and gave guaranteed years to that he never should have. But then you do look at this transition after Bruce. You look at re-signing Earl Edwards, locking him up to guaranteed years. You look at Thomas Vasilik the same month, signing him to multiple guaranteed years. So that's two goalkeepers there wasting, you know, roster spots. And then you had to use the buyout in Vasilik. That's one of the reasons you're limited in being able to do anything now, because you don't have another buyout that you can use that would, you know, give you salary cap relief. And then, you know, I don't think Mensah was a bad off-season signing. I think he's a decent depth piece. He's unfortunately got hurt this game. I think he was one of the few guys in that Club America game that didn't look completely overwhelmed at times. Not that he had a perfect game by any stretch, but I thought he actually looked okay in comparison to a lot of the guys out there. And I think he's been, you know, an okay fill-in center back. I think he's definitely an upgrade from what Omar Gonzalez was for the Revolution, if he's your third or fourth center back. So I don't mind that signing. Nick Lima hasn't been amazing. I still don't hate that signing as a, you know, as a backup right back long term, as your, you know, guy getting regular minutes. Not great. But I think more of the disappointment is, you know, they didn't give themselves flexibility to add people of any significant value, and then they didn't add anyone of any significant value. They added some depth pieces. And I agree with you, Tom, that this roster as is should be capable of making the playoffs. There's no question about it. But they didn't really do much to improve it other than adding a few depth pieces in the offseason. And, you know, Anolfo didn't have a lot of wiggle room, but he probably could have done a little bit more than he did.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely didn't improve the team, right? I mean, the guys that they targeted, you know, have filled the roles that they targeted them for. I just don't think that they thought everything was going to go this bad. You know, like Lima, you know, Lima was fine last night. He wasn't fantastic, but I also think that he was underutilized. There was plenty of times in the first half where he was actually out wide and just standing in open space, and no one even looked over at him. There was one sequence of play where they made several passes on the left side, nowhere to go. He was in plenty of open space, and then finally Ravas tried to knock it out to him and severely underhit it by 15 yards and ended up landing in the midfield. But he had, you know, a couple of decent crosses last night. You know, he was all right on the ball, but that's what he was brought in to do, right? He was brought in to pop up with an occasional strong performance, you know, a decent guy off the bench, kind of like a Boateng, right? Someone that maybe can come in, put in a couple of good starts in a row, but is really there to come off the bench and kind of be a depth guy. And that's what he's done. You know, I don't really think anyone expected him to be starting and playing as much as he has been. So I think that's the issue, right? Is Lima definitely gets exposed. You know, his first couple games were pretty poor. Mensah, you know, like you said, Mensah's been fine. He's not great, but again, he's a kind of a player to rotate with, kind of a depth piece. So again, to see him out there starting last night, you know, that seemed a little surprising.
Yeah, to me, the biggest mistake, and I think you disagree with me on this one, actually, is that they didn't go out and get a third striker in the offseason. I think that was a glaring need with the question marks around Rioni and what he could do, and we, you know, not knowing whether he was going to be effective, and then having the backup be Bobby Wood, who I don't think we expected him to have the knee problems he's having this year to the extent he's had them, but you know, he was a guy that historically has been injury prone and is on the older side. So I think I know Caleb Porter has kind of defended this as saying, you know, when anyone gets to their third striker, they're in trouble. But I think it was kind of predictable that the Revs needed a third striker this season, given, you know, A, you didn't know what you're going to get from Vrioni, and B, you had an aging Bobby Wood who does have an injury history, regardless of whether, you know, you could predict that it was going to be as bad as it's been.
Yeah, I mean, but the whole Bobby Wood thing, you know, I do really feel for him because, I mean, he's on the other side of 30, but he's not that old. I think he's 31, 32. Like, he's not at the stage where it's like, oh, you know, this guy's finished. But the reality is that with the knee injury that he has and how limited that is going to, how big of a limit that's going to put on his playing time. You know, he's been really, really ineffective in the limited amount of time that he's had. So, I mean, very, very quickly, you know, Bobby Wood looks like someone whose career is, you know, at least at the MLS level, this probably be his last season in MLS. I don't think anyone expected it to be quite that bad because last season he actually played like 1500 minutes. That was like the most amount of minutes that he had played in like the last like 4 or 5 years. But yeah, obviously that was very short lived. And we talked about it before, Jordan Adebayo-Smith was on the bench again from Minnesota last night. And he's someone that the Revs could have used at least off the bench and probably gotten, you know, maybe 120 to 180 minutes already this season. And he's in Minnesota and we didn't get anything back of any use for trading him.
Yeah, I agree with you there. The one thing I just say is I think what they got out of Bobby Wood last year was an anomaly. And they were very lucky to get the amount of minutes they got from him. Because you look at it, you know, before that, I think Salt Lake in 2022 couldn't get 1,000 minutes out of him. You know, he had several seasons he missed injured before that. So I think, to me, well, I get where you're coming from. He's not that old. You expect him to be healthier than he has been. If you look at his history, he hasn't historically been. And I think they far exceeded expectations what they got from him last year. And they should have had a contingency plan because of that. And, you know, there were options out there to have somebody out there. And you know, I don't think keeping Justin Renix on as your third striker option would have done anything, but I do think they needed to go out there and give somebody a chance, even if it, you know, wasn't a flashy signing, but somebody else that they could have out there to at least compete for Vrioni when he's playing poorly.
They definitely pushed their luck with Wood. Yeah, for sure.
On that note, C-Mag on Twitter says, Porter says the goals will come. Will they?
He hasn't said that recently, has he?
He hasn't said that in a while, I don't think.
But. Yeah, he's at least tightened up a little bit on his bold predictions. You know, aside from promising a win this week. I don't see anything that would give reason to think that the goals are going to come. Especially, again, you know, you play a home game, and in the second half of a home game, your XG is 0.08. You have one shot. And you didn't shoot the ball towards the other team's goal for the last 40 minutes. So the goals aren't going to come that way. That's for sure.
The one positive I will say is, you know, I have Chonkalai this season hasn't lived up to expectations from what we saw last year, but I have seen kind of a shift from him late in the Club America game and in this game where he's been more effective as a provider rather than kind of create his own shots. Because I think when he's become way too predictable on his own, when he's trying to create his own shots, I think in past episodes we talked about how often his shots get blocked. And I think he's become way too predictable that way, and that's disappointing. But I have seen him get, you know, improving as far as a chance creator. And he did have 3 chances created this last game, 2 big chances created. I think both were to Vrioni, and ones that, you know, Vrioni probably should have done better with. And that is a positive, because we also saw it at the end of the Club America game. And I don't know if that is, you know, long-term something that's going to work out. But Chonkai could have had 2 assists in this game if Vrioni finished better. And that is a slight positive. With that said, I don't know that the goals are going to start coming in bunches anytime soon. The one thing that I will note is you talked about Charlotte being very bad offensively. The one thing the Revs have going for them next weekend is New York City FC is also very bad offensively. They have scored 5 goals in 7 games and do not look like a team that's having much luck in front of the net either. So maybe there's some hope for another 1-0 grinded out win where the opponent wastes several good chances.
Yeah, I that is my least favorite game of the year, is the away game to New York City that is played on what is it's a 99 field. I mean, that it's not a regulation size field, and coaches have actually like walked it off with and like counted their steps, and they've just been like, yeah, this is a joke. It's not a regulation size field. It is a complete joke that games are allowed to be played there. I absolutely hate watching that game. It's a complete joke. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe they won't be able to play out of the back in that game because there's no space to play. So it'd be interesting to see how they deal with that. But anything that happens in that game to me is just a complete one-off. It's just a complete joke that Major League Soccer seriously allows a team to play 17 games on that thing a season.
I agree with everything you just said, and I also with my point about Chalk Line looking better wide and sending crosses in. It's a lot harder to do that there too. So there's, it'll be interesting to see how he lines up for this game, because you might see a formation change. You probably want to see Chalk Line a little bit more centrally in this game or something. It is a one-off kind of throwaway game. But with all that said, it's another game where the Revs desperately need points because of the hole they've dug themselves in.
Yeah. On Chocolate, he did, you know, he seemed to stay out wide a little bit more. And, you know, those two crosses that he put in, instead of playing those, you know, 40, 50, 60 yard cross field passes that slows down a counterattack, that's kind of been his, you know, he's doing like a John Robertson tribute act. He was much more effective last night with those two crosses to Veroni, but those are from positions in and around the penalty area. The shot he took, you know, was blocked, but it looked like it was headed on target. He actually shot it from inside the penalty area. Right. So I think if he starts to remember, you've never scored a goal outside the penalty area since you've been in MLS, and he can be dangerous creating chances in and around the penalty area, especially from a wide position. So there was a little bit more of that last night, and I think they're going to need a lot more of it going forward, and not this drifting into the middle thing he's been experimenting with.
Yeah, completely agree. Porter on Twitter, not Caleb Porter, to clarify, says, what are the chances that Darlington Nagbe signs with the Revs before the window closes?
Is he available?
He's on Columbus and he's starting every game. So to me, the chances are zero unless the Revs vastly overpay Columbus to get him, which I don't think is going to happen.
Yeah, I would put that as a 0% chance.
I do think that's the type of player that could help Caleb Porter do what he wants to do, even at, 34 years old. But I don't think that is – I don't think he's walking through that door anytime soon.
No. No.
Next one, Paulo S. on Twitter says, I don't know if we deserve the 3 points, but we got them. Ravis is so lucky. His mistake went unpunished. Agreed. We go down early in that fashion. It's a very different match. We dodged a couple bullets today. Can't rely on that luck in New York. Win's a win, but this was not convincing. Predictions for New York City. I will quickly just add before I throw this off to you is that there's a chance you might be able to rely on this luck in New York, for the reason that I said is that they are terrible at finishing off chances too.
Yeah. I mean, no, I think we kind of talked about all this already. They got 3 points. It wasn't a great performance. Can't really be sitting here saying like, oh, there's definitely been, there's been steps forward. The only step forward is in that they, you know, they got 3 points. They had a lead for the first time this season. You're not always going to get away with those types of mistakes. Those types of mistakes are going to happen. Again, like I said earlier, it looks particularly bad when the goalkeeper does it. But as far as next week, I don't know. The other thing I think we haven't really talked about is they've played 6 games and they have 4 points, and 4 of those games have been home games. So they've actually been at home 2/3 of the time and things haven't gone well. And, you know, now that this 3-game homestand is over, we're going to be very quickly reminded of the 2 away games that they've had so far have been unmitigated disasters. So I don't see any reason to think that they're going to win next week.
Yeah, I agree. I think if I'm a betting man, I'm going to bet against the Revs winning this game. I'm going to bet that they lose this game. But I will say I have watched New York City FC this year, and I have been very unimpressed with them. They're a team that I think people look back historically and think of the New York City FC team that scored a lot of goals when they had guys like Valentin Castellanos, or even before that when they had David Villa. They have really struggled since Castellanos left to find someone to put the ball in the back of the net. And like I said earlier, I think that's the one thing the Revs have going for them in this game is that, you know, they might get lucky, and they might have some mistakes like they had against Charlotte, and New York City might not punish them for that because they don't have great finishers right now either. I wouldn't bet on the Revs to win this game, but I do think that this is, you know, New York City FC is one of those teams where you look at the standings right now and they are only 1 point ahead of the Revs. They're a team that could long-term be worse than the Revs this season, is a team that I think the Revs could leapfrog. But again, playing in the Yankee Stadium in that crap tiny postage stamp field, you know, anything could happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be tough. The week after that is away to Toronto. Toronto was already able to, you know, to get a win off the Revs at Gillette. And then the home game after that is not going to be a typical home game. That is going to be against Inter Miami. There's going to be 60,000 people there. And Messi was back on the bench last night. So, yeah, not a ton of optimism for the next 3.
Yeah, Aiden is my name on Twitter had a bit more optimism, actually. He says, overall, we did well. All defensive issues are self-inflicted, but we're getting better applying consistent offensive pressure. Chalkline needs to sort out his decision-making. Vrioni did well, should have scored. More comments and questions. Any disagreements or agreements there?
Oh, no. I mean, they didn't perform. Offensive pressure. What offensive pressure? They didn't shoot the ball for the last 40 minutes of a home game. That is the opposite of offensive pressure. That is clinging on for dear life to try and beat a team that is worse at scoring goals than you are, which takes some doing at this point.
Yeah, I will say that I was impressed with Vrioni's effort. He was getting all over the pitch and putting some pressure on the defense, but his finishing, again, let him down. He had those two chances that he had, the one where he hit the crossbar, one header where he hit the crossbar, another header that he sent just wide. I think the one where he sent just wide was probably the better of the two chances. He should have done better with that. And then he had that breakaway chance where I think it was Nacho Gil played the pass to him near midfield, and he was behind the defense. And he cut so far left that he narrowed his own angle so tremendously that he made it an easy save for the goalkeeper when really he essentially one-on-one with the keeper there. There were some positives to take from this game from Vrioni, and that he got himself in good position and was working really hard, but he kind of wasted it by his finishing letting him down so much.
Yeah, I mean, he did have two, you know, those two headers were, I mean, the first header was not really a great header. I'm not going to be overly critical of someone trying to make a snap decision, but, you know, he went near post at the near post when he had, you know, a much easier just try and redirecting it where it came from towards the back post. The second one is just, you know, it's just a bit of bad luck. 3 inches lower, and it probably hits the crossbar, hit the keeper's hand, and if it spills, it's probably there to be kicked in anyway. But the thing is, you know, okay, there's some promising stuff there, and you know, maybe if this was a year ago, you could say, okay, well, maybe this is going to lead to more. But what we know about Vrioni so far is every time he seems to have some sort of a promising breakthrough, that is followed up by more frustrating performances. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that he scored in two straight games, and we were saying, okay, all right, maybe that, you know, he scored in a CONCACAF game, he scored in an MLS game, you know, so that's 2-2. Maybe get the ball rolling, and you know, what can you say?
I think that's the point. I think it was our former co-host of Revolution Recap, Chris Velugas. I think he tweeted out that, you know, these headers that are just missing wide and hitting the crossbar remind me of Adam Buxa. Well, Adam Buxa did that, you know, like his first couple weeks here, his first month here, first season here, half season here, and then turned things around and got really good. So Rooney's been here almost two seasons now. We count as half season, full season, and now another half season. It's a little too late to, you know, be getting excited about the half chances and the, you know, the positive signs, because we've seen them before, like you said, and they haven't led to anything consistent. So, I'd rather see what we saw last night than what we've seen in some games earlier in the season where he wasn't really involved at all. But it's almost too late to just be, you know, feeling positive vibes for, you know, some near misses.
Yeah, the only thing that is going to build confidence now is just these goals. Not almost goals, not near, not working really hard. Like, you know, he's going to have to start scoring. Because aside from Kailas, it doesn't really seem to be a lot of goals coming from anywhere else.
Yeah, and to me, I can give him a pass on those two headers. The one that really was more disappointing was that chance he had right around the 45th minute mark. Where he was sent in behind the defense and, you know, had, you know, 45 yards running in goal and didn't necessarily get caught by the defender. It was more he just dribbled himself to a bad angle and wasted the chance. And that's someone, you know, that's an opportunity that you'd like to see a designated player striker be more dangerous on and find a way to put that in the back of the net. Again, headers, near miss headers, they happen. That I'd like to see more of a killer instinct, and we didn't see it there.
Yep.
All right. Derek Terrell on Twitter says, thoughts on DJ Chris Rocks? And Tom, I know you're not on Twitter. I don't know if you saw, there was some back and forth on Twitter about how DJ Chris Rocks, I think, first DJ of the game in that New York City FC playoff game that the Revs lost, and it's kind of been all downhill from there. Is that DJ Chris Rocks' fault? What are your thoughts?
No, I mean, he's been here for a couple of years, hasn't he? Like,
I think he first became permanent at the Supporters Shield season. At least from what I don't know if this is actually accurate, but I think the Supporters Shield season, I think I don't know if his first game was the playoffs, but I saw somebody say his first game was that playoff loss. So if that's true, then he started with the playoff loss, and then last year was what it was, and then this year. But I don't know. Yeah. You're in the stands. I'm not. Is he a good DJ? I don't know.
I mean, Is he a good DJ? He plays a curated list of songs. I mean, he's not like I don't know. I you know, this game in particular, I didn't even, you know, the field could have caught on fire at halftime. I wouldn't have noticed. I mean, as soon as the whistle went, you know, we ran straight to the we went straight into the heated beer hall and huddled in there with all the other people that dragged themselves out to this game, and just, you know, we just sat under the heaters for 15 minutes, and I really couldn't hear anything. So,
well, yeah, we got a couple questions about the weather. John Pilkington has an important question: will it ever stop raining?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. You know, hopefully the next time is, you know, April 27th, and, you know, but look, I mean, this is New England, right? The fact that an April nor'easter, you know, spun rain back onto us, you know, like 2 days after it moved out of New England, and it's just sitting there in the ocean throwing rain back at, I mean, you know, this is life in New England.
And I'm definitely going to botch this last name, so I apologize in advance, Cole. Please tell me how to pronounce it. Cole I'm sorry. Tell me how to pronounce this one. So it's one of the chances the Revs Everett Stadium has a roof. Weather for these games has been brutal. I agree with how bad the weather has been this game. I think it's important that the Revs Everett Stadium, if it does happen, does have a roof over the stands.
Yeah, it should definitely be more of like the – I think most of the soccer-specific ones are fairly enclosed.
Yeah.
So at least the stands can stay, you know, relatively dry. I mean, the rain, you know, look, the thing is, you know, this March, April rain, and then again, you know, in October, November, you know, it tends to come down sideways. So, I'm sure it would help and it would be appreciated. So hopefully that is a feature of – you know, that stadium, if it ever actually, you know, gets built.
Yeah, fingers crossed on that.
for some people, for me personally, if they move to Everett, you know, I'll probably never go to a game again. But
yeah, it'll be a lot more difficult for me as well. But you do hope if they do build that stadium that they take into account the bad New England weather and have a roof over the stands. Fern77 says, I don't understand starting Nick Lima over Marcelito, which is apparently their nickname for Ryan Spalding. Porter said he earned his spot and was one of the few in the America game that showed some fight, then no minutes. Lima is all over the place and annoyingly overthought his passes. Also, we are just so lost when we attack.
Yeah, but this is the thing. Like, so they've convinced themselves that Jones plays better on the left than he does on the right. So in order for Spalding to play, it's not that simple. It's not Spalding over Lima. It's Spalding over Lima, but then that means that Jones goes to right back so that Spalding can play left back. So it's not really that simple. And, you know, look, I mean, I wasn't like thrilled to see Lima's name, you know, on the starting lineup, but at the same time, you know, he had a solid game. He didn't really, you know, he wasn't fantastic, but he certainly wasn't horrible either. You know, he connected most of his passes. He had a couple crosses. They could have got him on the ball more. He held his position really well out wide, and defensively he was fine. So, you know, yeah, he's not a long-term solution, but he wasn't brought in to be a long-term solution. He was brought in to be a backup outside back. But that's not really, the conversation is more complicated than Lima versus Spalding because they don't play the same position.
Yeah, and I will count myself as one of those people that has convinced themselves that Jones is a better left back than right back. And, you know, he's been playing there for the Revs for so long. A couple years ago, you could make a strong argument he was the best left back in MLS. I don't think you could necessarily make that case this year or last year even. But I do think he plays a lot better on the left, and that's where the Revs have trained him. And that's where he's going to play when Brandon Bye is healthy. So I almost think it was a negative impact on him last year when they switched him over to the right a lot of games after Brandon Bye went hurt. I don't think that benefited the Revs long term. I don't think that benefited the Revs short term. I think it's important to note that it's a more nuanced conversation than Nick Lima or Spalding. Like you said, it's you're putting Dwan Jones in a position that at least I think he's not as good at it, despite the fact he's right-footed. He's just learned to play that left-back spot so well and done so well there that, and long-term, that is where he's going to play. So to me, that's the difficult part. If you asked me, you know, one for one, if factoring that out, I'd probably go with Spalding over Lima. But I also don't think there's that huge of a gap between the two of them where you can't factor in the fact that you might be getting less out of Dwan Jones when you put it right back.
Yeah. For whatever reason, I thought Jones played pretty well last night. I mean, he got down the left flank a bit more than he has in previous games. You know, he was, you know, I mean, when they compelled themselves to counterattack, you know, he was able to get involved. I mean, it's not a typical occurrence where a player that prefers his right foot actually prefers to play on the left side from an outside back position, but clearly he makes it work and that's where he's comfortable. And yeah, I agree. I don't think the solution to our outstanding outside back on one side is out. So let's take the guy that's playing well on the left and switch him over to the right. And it's like, look, just leave players that are playing well in a certain position, just leave them where they are. And I think maybe Porter is starting to come around to that now.
Yeah, and I don't think it necessarily would have been a bad idea in this game, you know, late if you needed more offense and were losing to put Jones on the right to get Spalding on and kind of switch things up. But overall, I think it makes sense to keep a guy who's a really strong left back at left back. DC on Twitter says, a solid performance in team victory. I think you and I might disagree with that. He says, Vrioni should have had a hat trick. My question is, why are we so slow in transition? I feel it's poor diagonal runs. And he's got another question, but I'll stop there. Why is Rev so slow in transition?
To be honest, I think there's confusion. I think there's confusion in the team as to what they're supposed to do in those situations, because this goes back to what Porter has said. Porter has said, like, oh, hey, no, I want these guys on the front foot. I want them to go forward and make runs. And he gets frustrated when they don't. But at the same time, the team continues to have counterattacking opportunities and they don't do it. They play the ball backwards. So I don't know. I just feel like there's something missing in Porter's communication that the team just hasn't, the team hasn't picked up on what he really wants them to do in certain situations. And you see Porter kind of throwing his hands up in the air quite a bit. You see players on the team throwing hands up in the air and giving each other like quizzical looks on a pretty regular basis. So to me, from the outside, just watching body language from the coach, I've coached teams where I've been visibly frustrated because they don't, whatever I'm trying to get them to do, they're not quite doing it the way that I want them to do. But that's the coach's fault. If you're trying to communicate something to a team and they're not doing what you want them to do, well, then you need to communicate it differently. He's been doing this long enough that he should know that, you know, like you can throw your hands up in the air and you can be, you know, you can be visibly frustrated all you want. You know, you can throw a little hissy fit. I've thrown plenty of hissy fits myself. Doesn't get anywhere. The players aren't impressed when you do that, and it doesn't help anything. You've got to find a better way to explain yourself and find a better way to get them to understand what it is that you want them to do, because right now they look like a very confused team.
Yeah, and we know they don't have to play this long transition because we saw pretty much the same roster, you know, be pretty effective in transition under Bruce Arena last year before things went south. So I 100% think it's on the coaching staff. I agree with you there. And I, you know, he talked after the game about trying to simplify things a bit for this game, which is probably something he needs to do. I don't know that it was fully effective in this game, despite the fact they got 3 points, but yeah, I think it's 100% coaching. His second question here from DC is one that I think is a good one for you. He says, I feel Matt Polster's level has dropped, and it worries me that Buck is not showing there. I think there's a missing something, but he says, harvest Buck's speed.
Polster's level, I guess, I don't know that Polster's level has dropped. I just think more people are coming around to seeing his limitations. He picked up yet another yellow card again last night with his very typical, I've been beaten by this player, so I'm just going to bear hug him and spin him around and then he looks like surprised. You know, he looks surprised when he gets a yellow. It's like, you did that on purpose. You intentionally broke up a play by bear hugging someone, which you can't do in this particular code of football. So you get a yellow card for that. So I just think people are kind of coming around to, this is what he is. He is the destroyer that some people think this team needs. He just runs around smashing into people. And his first place to look when he gets the ball is to just give it back to the person that gave it to him. Has his level dropped? I mean, sure. I mean, you know, during the season that they won the Shield, he was probably, you know, a bit of an above average MLS central midfielder. But now he is, you know, I don't know. At best, he's average. He tends to get good foot mob ratings, and I think maybe that's what people look at. He keeps piling up these 10-yard passes to the guy that gave it to him, and foot mob seems to overvalue those types of passes.
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think his level has dropped. I think 2 years ago he was able to cover more ground than he does now. I do think that's a change, and I also think that the system just exposes him more than it did necessarily under Bruce. I think the trying to build out of the back and create something when he's a guy that, like you said, is more comfortable making those 10-yard passes back to the guy rather than kind of a transition forward to spring Carly's heel going forward or something like that. I think he's more exposed. So I think as he's gotten older, he hasn't been able to cover as much ground as he used to be able to cover. And then the system, I think, also exposes him. And as far as Noel Bach, I'm one of those people that is very disappointed in how Noel Bach has showed this season and, kind of his lack of minutes, but even what he has done in those minutes. I do rate Bach pretty highly based on what we saw at the beginning of last season. And I don't think we saw that this year. And, that adds to the Revs' problems is, going into the season, it seemed like he had four guys that were, competing for two spots and it was a legitimate competition. Seems like we've kind of lost that competition because Bach hasn't, been able to play at the level he played last year. And I personally don't rate Kay very well, and I don't think Caleb Porter rates Kay very well either. So, yeah, it's a it looked like a spot that could be strength in numbers for the Revs, and now it's more numbers that probably aren't good enough to do what the Revs need them to do.
Yeah, I don't know what's happened to Buck. He needed an ego check after last season for sure. Just listening to some of his interviews and just kind of the way he acted on the field, I think he was getting a little too big on himself too quickly. But Porter's gone way in the other direction now. He hasn't just kind of checked him like, hey, look, you're still 18 years old. You haven't proven anything. He's gone beyond that to the point now where I think he's buried him, and that's gonna send his confidence headed all the way back in the other direction. So yeah, I mean he seemed to think pretty highly of himself last season, but I think Porter has kind of pushed that a little too far now, and is gonna have Buck going back the other way. And you've got to give a young player more opportunities than he's given him. Porter doesn't really seem to, and this is something that we heard Columbus Crew fans reference when he was hired, that he doesn't really like to give opportunities to young players. And he really hasn't done that because he's given Buck very little opportunity. Even Esmer, he talked up Esmer quite a bit. He started the first couple games. And, last night, where was Esmer? Nacho is settling into kind of being like a Boateng, or maybe even like a Lima, where, okay, he can come in maybe 2-3 games, play well, could be a good player off the bench. But as a long-term option, week in and week out, I think he's showing himself not to be a strong, week in and week out performer. I also think he encourages Carlos's incredibly poor behavior towards referees, which, like we said, that's supposed to be gone now. The good refs are back. So, what are you guys complaining about? But, I think Buck, Esmer, they're seeing their chances of road, which doesn't make sense to me. And Panayiotou, why is Panayiotou not gone out on loan? He clearly rates him about a half step in front of McNamara. So that's another one of these roster decisions that you want to talk about is, Panayiotou, he looked pretty good at the Revs 2 game last week. He looked like someone who, this is a kid that needs to be playing somewhere else. But Caleb hasn't, I don't think Caleb can even pronounce his name yet.
I think you might rate him a half step behind McNamara, to be honest. McNamara at least has had a few minutes. Trey on Twitter says, even though the Revs won, since they lost the possession battle, did we truly win? Tom, I know you like to track other stats to show how a team is doing beyond just the scoreline. Did the Revs truly win if they lost the possession battle?
Possession itself, no. Possession itself is really not all that important. But you would expect to come out ahead in possession in your home games, but you would also expect more of the game to be played in your opponent's half than your half. I think that's more important than just purely looking at possession. And in the second half, that wasn't the case. In the second half, they had less possession overall to a team that, by the way, only had 43% possession in their previous six games. They had, they had much more possession in the second. The second half, it was 56-44 in favor of Charlotte, and Charlotte played a lot more passes. They played 174 passes in the Revs' half. The Revs played 61 in Charlotte's half in the second half. So that number to me is more important than the possession number. Is not how much do you have the ball, but where are you having it? And so the fact that the majority of the second half was played, within 25 yards of the Revs' goal, that's why, many people, myself included, had a pretty deflating feeling at the end of the game. Yeah, okay, they got 3 points, but, this isn't going to cut it. This is 4 points from four home games. So you're a quarter way into the season, and you have, you're a quarter of the way into your number of home games thereabouts, four out of 17, and you have four of the 40 points that you got at home last season. So you're a quarter way into your home games, and you have 10% of the points.
Yeah, and it is funny, too. If you go back to before the bye week, the Revs were actually top in MLS in average possession per game, and Charlotte is right near the bottom. So I don't think you would have predicted the game to play out the way it did.
No.
Charlotte is not a team that thrives in possession either. So I think this is a Revs team that in many ways is better suited to play on the counterattack, but that's not how Caleb Porter has wanted to play this season. So it's a weird how this game played out. With that said, Revs Ball Noir says, a win is a win. I will take it in this awful weather, and after getting blown out earlier in the week to Club America, the NYCFC game will define the season. Will they fight for playoffs, or is it a lost season? We will find out next weekend. Tom, thoughts on that? To me, it's maybe a step too far to say that NYCFC game will define the season, for the reason you pointed out, is that playing in Yankee Stadium is just leads to a soccer game that you're not going to replicate anywhere else.
Yeah, it's just such a one-off that anything can happen in that game. I think the next three games, right? So the one-off joke of a game, you got to go away to Toronto, and then the home game against Inter Miami. From those possible 9 points, if they don't come up with at least four, then I think we just kind of need to gear up for this being a season where they're not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's a better kind of way to look at it than just looking at this New York City FC game as defining the season. Ryan DePlesia says, I'm happy we finally got a win. Unpopular opinion, but I feel that we flail and verbally abuse refs about fouls more than we do, more than any other team. Is this a product of Carles Hill or the referees? Tom, I don't know if that's an unpopular opinion. I think you and I might kind of agree with it, right?
I think a lot of people agree with it, to be honest. It's been particularly bad this season. And, to a certain extent, I thought it was because of the replacement refs. I felt like the players were trying to give them a harder time than normal because they were replacement referees, and like in solidarity with the guys that were on strike, they were going to really try and make these guys look as bad as they possibly could. But it's carried on into the games now with the regular referees, which we know, of course, are all infallible, and refereeing standards have been of the absolute highest in MLS going all the way back to the beginning of the league. But it's a bad look. I personally can't stand it. It's something that it doesn't help. And Carles in particular, he's picking up yellow cards for running his mouth.
He's two away from a suspension now.
Yeah. Right. So he's two games away. He's two yellows away from a suspension, six games into the season, and not for fouls, just because he can't contain himself. He can't control his emotions. It's not a good look, and it's gotten worse this season.
And he actually committed a foul late in this game that I thought was a borderline yellow, where he could have potentially gotten a second yellow in this game. So it's not even just the yellow card accumulation. Once you get a, I think it was a first half yellow he got for dissent in this game. Once you get an early yellow for dissent, even if you're the number 10, you one stupid foul or one mistake, you can be sent off too. So yeah, I think it's a problem. I do think it impacts how they play sometimes. It stops from playing. And one thing I'll say about this game is, I thought it was reffed pretty evenly, and that the ref let a lot of very physical play go, but he let it go both ways. I thought it was actually a relatively consistent performance from the referee, and just that he let a lot of physical things go both ways.
Yeah, I thought the referee was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so I don't know. You know, and that's actually a good point too. Like when you pick up a silly yellow for no reason, you know, then you've got to be even more cautious, you know, for the rest of the game. You know, Rhode Island FC had a player sent off last night. He picked up a second yellow, and he had made a kind of a boneheaded play in the first half. He went in for like a slide tackle, which he was nowhere near anything. Luckily, he missed the player. He gets up, runs 5 yards, throws himself into another two-footed slide tackle. Totally unnecessary. Picks up a yellow, and then, you know, but it was early in the game, and it's almost like he forgot that he was on a yellow. So he shoulder barged another guy, and he got himself sent off for 20 minutes to play. RAFC fans seem to want to blame that one on the weather, but shoulder barging someone when you're already on a yellow is generally not advisable. So, yeah, that's a good point, too. Like, you pick up a yellow card early enough in the game, maybe you kind of forget about it or it slips your mind, and then you go and make another stupid foul. I think it's gonna affect the team in a very negative way, you know, relatively soon at the rate that he's going.
Yeah, and yeah, I'll leave it at that. Trigger says, should Caleb Porter promise a win every time he goes at 98.5? One for one, I think maybe he should.
Yeah, I mean, I think he just needs to take this as, you know, something he got away with. You know, he did a massive climb down and backtracked and said, oh, it was a throwaway comment. It's like, I'm sorry, give me a break. Like, he's been coaching for 10 years, 34 games a season, two press conferences a week. So you're telling me that, you're 680 press conferences into your career, and you don't know that if you throw out the line, I promise that we'll get a win, that that's going to turn into a thing? I mean, I don't know.
I thought he looked even worse when he walked it back, though, to be honest. Like, you made the dumb comment. Just stick with it.
Yeah, I know. It's like, yeah, like, just stand behind it. Why did you have to? You should just wait till after the game. Let whatever happens happen, and then after the game, you know, hey Caleb, you know, you promised the team a win, and you know, you had a 1-1 draw, and it's just like, hey, look, you know, just trying to find a way to, you know, kind of get the team fired up, whether it's in the locker room, outside the locker room, you know, I'm really just trying to, you know, kind of get the fan base going, you know, like, fine, just, hey, look, you know, I'm just trying to find a spark to get this team a win. And instead, he comes back with this, oh, I didn't really mean to say that. It was a throwaway. It's like, do you firmly believe in – he doesn't even firmly believe in his own words the day after he says them.
Trigger also says, Chonklai has looked like that kid who thinks he's better than he is during pickup games. How do the Revs get him back to being that dynamic, impressive presence we saw last season?
He looked better last night, to be fair. He did take a shot with a player directly in front of him, but it was well struck. It was inside the penalty area. It looked like it was going to be on target and a difficult one for the keeper to deal with. And like we said earlier, you know, he had a couple of really nice crosses from, you know, from good positions, you know, kind of around the edge of the penalty area. So I actually saw some flashes of what he did last season. So hopefully this is a sign that he's going to get back to, you know, he's going to get back to doing what he was doing last year.
Yeah, I agree. I think part of it too is a predictability thing, is that when he came into the league, people didn't know that he was going to cut inside and take that shot every time. And now teams know that, so they can defend against it. And that's why so many of his shots are getting blocked. But we saw in this game, you know, like you said, like we talked about earlier, you know, him getting wide and sending those crosses in that were very dangerous. I also think he's generally a better corner kick taker than Carlos Hill, so he can be an effective that way as well. Yeah, I think there was actually some progress from him in this game, and that he found other ways to be effective other than just, you know, cutting inside and blasting a shot off the nearest defender. See what that translates for going forward.
Yeah, I mean, you can open up more space for yourself to shoot by distributing the ball to others, right? If you get the ball out wide and, you know, you go to your left and you try and beat him to the touchline once, you cut in and play across the second time, and then the third time you cut in and look to shoot. You know, if you're going up against the same player, if you take him three different ways the first three times, then he doesn't know what you're going to do after that. So, yeah, I think it was a good sign last night. And you know, he's going to have to stretch the field as much as possible last week, because there's not much of a field to stretch.
Yeah. Traeger's last question is, why has Porter regressed on his sub use? And just quickly for reminder for everybody, first sub in this game was Dave Rami coming on because Mensah got hurt in the 44th minute, and then we didn't see another sub until the 73rd minute when Bobby Wood came on. And then, as you pointed out, Esmir got token 3 minutes at the end of this game coming on for Nacho, and K-Cat got the same token 3 minutes coming on for Ian Hark. So Really, the only sub he made early in this game was forced, and then a couple of late subs. Do you feel he's regressed on his sub use?
As we were like at 3 minutes?
3 minutes plus stoppage time. He was standing on the sideline, I think, for 4 or 5 minutes waiting to come on too. So it looked like he was gonna come on sooner.
Yeah, but they didn't even get right, but they didn't even get there. They didn't even get to midfield until the 80, that's right. He didn't even get there until the 80th minute. So he planned to give Esmir an entire 10 minutes to make something happen. And then, you know, I mean, again, you know, if you run someone up there at the 80th minute, you know, you can't call timeout. You got to wait for the ball to go out of bounds and wait for the referee to decide that it's an opportunity to make substitutions. I don't think Nacho was really doing anything to warrant keeping him on the field past, you know, probably the 65 minute mark. I think most coaches look to give the team 15 minutes after halftime. Like, hey, look, you know, let's go out and see if we can put another one past these guys the first 15, 20 minutes. And then if that doesn't happen, you know, I'm going to start to look to make some changes. Because you've got to give somebody like Esmer, you've got to give him 5, 6 minutes to get into the game. So now if you bring him in the 65th minute, he gets into the flow of the game by the 70th minute, and you give him 20 minutes to make something happen. But having him stand at the midfield line for 4 minutes, he gets in with 3 minutes to go. Like, again, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Well, we gave him some time, and he didn't make anything happen. It's like, well, but you barely even played him. And yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a strange one.
Yeah, I think the only answer that I can come up with is that he doesn't trust his subs, and he gave him more minutes earlier on in the season, which I think he's what he should be doing. And then maybe didn't see what he wanted to see from them. And so now he's giving them less minutes. But yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you just said. I think a guy like Esmer should come on sooner. I don't know why Boateng has been buried on the bench. I get in this game why you wouldn't necessarily bring him on, but in games where they're tied or are losing, we've barely seen him after some early minutes. So I don't know, but the only thing I can think of is that Porter doesn't trust him. And maybe if you're reading between the lines on that comment about the Club America game and giving all these guys that haven't seen a lot of minutes more minutes to prove something to them, because they might not be here in the future if they don't, I think that kind of can lead to that same conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, I think you would expect to see Boateng, Esmir, Buck, Kay, at least those.
Yeah, he said he's going to try to. I think he said Wood might go 45 minutes. That'd be interesting.
Well, that's probably the most that he can play at this point. But Esmir in particular, like, who cares if he's a young player or not? Like, he's a good player, and he played well when he was playing. That's the other thing too. Like, he gave him chances earlier in the season, and he played really well, and now he's not getting those chances anymore. So, Esmir, what's happening to him? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me, except for the thing we heard about Porter is that he just doesn't like to play kids.
And I want to give Esmir a quick shout out too for his play in this game in those very limited minutes, because I think one of the knocks on him over Nacho is that maybe Nacho's a safer choice and Nacho, you know, might get more out of defensively. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I thought Esmir came out of this game and actually had a really nice defensive play where he stopped the guy in the box in his tracks. But that was one thing that stood out to me. He had very, very few minutes to do anything, but he actually came in and had a nice defensive play. So I think he deserves more minutes. I think he's a guy that, you know, has a lot of creativity and can create something. And this is an offense that needs that right now based on how few goals they're scoring. So
yeah, absolutely.
Randy LH on Twitter says, obviously I'll take a win, but do we think this answered any questions for us? Not to be a negative nabob, but we looked mediocre to bad in most facets of the game, especially playing out of the back. And I don't think we've gotten even a draw against better opposition.
I think we've covered all those points, and I would agree with all of them.
Great comment, Randy. We agree. Big John on Twitter says, not the prettiest win, but we got the job done. I'm still unsure of how the team will do from this point onwards, but we move next, ignore the Champions Cup because we know what's going to happen, but look forward to New York City. Also, I don't think I got anything to add there. I don't, Tom, other than I agree that let's ignore the Champions Cup and move on to New York City.
Yeah, I mean that obviously is completely and totally over. Just hopefully they can get something in New York next week. Anything you get there is a bonus, and anything you don't get, again, it's just a one-off kind of joke of a game.
Yeah. Steve McGrogan on Twitter says, what's with the bag of popcorn for Carlos Hill's player of the match? I don't know if you saw that, but they tweeted a picture of Carlos Hill with a giant bag of popcorn when they announced he was player of the match. From what I could tell, or from my best assumption, is Charlotte tweeted out the popcorn emoji when right after Caleb Porter made that comment about promising the win. So I think it was a kind of a joke on that. I don't know if you have any other theories.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. And again, that goes back to the other point. Okay, Porter said this thing in a press conference, and you know, instead of doing your monumental climb down the following day, you know, just let it play out. Let social media do its, you know, stupid thing for us to waste time and look at and whatever. And, you know, okay, they do a popcorn thing and then you counter with a giant bag of popcorn. And, you know, I mean, they could have just turned it into kind of a bit of a joke. And it actually would have become a throwaway comment if he didn't come out three times and say that it was a throwaway comment.
Right.
It can't really be a throwaway comment, can it? If you continually reference it, right? Like just letting it be out there and die as a throwaway comment would have made it one, but he kept bringing it up. Like, anyway.
V on Twitter said, happy for the win, but we're definitely lucky and most other teams would have taken the chances that Charlotte missed. How do the Revs tighten up their defense and get more organized back there?
I think they need to all be on the same page because they don't seem to be. They don't seem to be on the same page with one another. They don't seem to be on the same page with Porter. He's visibly frustrated. The players are routinely visibly frustrated. So if you don't really know clearly what you're supposed to be doing and what your teammates are supposed to be doing, and by definition, that leads to moments of disorganization. And if you're disorganized in an attacking sense, then the transition to defending is going to be disorganized as well. So, yeah, and I'm glad that just about everyone that has commented tonight has seen the same thing. That, yeah, okay, they got 3 points, but this type of performance is not going to deliver 3 points on a consistent basis.
Yeah, and part of the problem is that there's been so much rotation back there that they haven't had a consistent back four to kind of communicate better and work that out. I don't want to excuse it all on that, but I do think that's part of the problem. Is, you know, there hasn't been much consistency back there and who's playing, and that doesn't help. And especially with Dave Romney out, who's been your one steady presence. With that said, they've made the mistakes when he's in there too. So it's not just that. Derek Terrell says, I don't think Carlos Hill should be the captain if he's going to keep getting yellows for arguing with refs. Give Romney the captaincy. We talked about this on the bye week episode, and I think we were all kind of in agreement that maybe Carlos shouldn't be the captain, but it would be very, very hard to take that away from him at this point. And realistically, I don't think that's something you could do. I don't know if your opinion's changed at all, but my opinion is still that, you know, if you were starting from scratch in a vacuum, giving Dave Romney the captaincy would make a lot of sense, but I don't know that you can do that at this point.
No, I mean, you can't take it away from him. You take it away from him, you're on the risk of kind of losing him and, you know, and that could create, you know, internal issues within the team. But I don't know if Porter is this type of person, but if you look at like a player, Christian Romero for Tottenham had a habit of getting himself yellow carded and sent off for just repeatedly stupid decision-making, like wild out of control slide, just idiotic behavior. And Postecoglou came out and publicly stated, this needs to stop. He needs to stop putting himself in these situations. He needs to stop getting himself sent off. This he flat out said, this cannot continue. And since then, I say that now, Tottenham's playing right now. He's probably getting sent off with a red card as I say this. But since then, he's been much better. He's taken what the coach has said and taken it on board. So I do think that we are at the point where Porter needs to pull him, Nacho, and some of the other guys aside that are just having a go at the referee and just tell him this doesn't help anything. It's a bad look. You're going to pick up yellows. It's going to lead to suspensions. Like, knock it off. You need to knock it off.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. Josh Glay on Twitter says, do you feel both reassured and horrified at the same time by this result? I'm both thrilled and exhausted after the game.
I was definitely exhausted and shivering when I got back into my car. Thrilled? No, I don't think anyone's thrilled. I don't even think Porter was thrilled. I mean, I think the word that came up was, you know, just relieved, which I've been there before as a coach. There are definitely times when you go into a game, it's like, just please God, can we somehow win this game just so we can win a game? And you're not even happy when the game is over. You're just happy that your only happiness is that you didn't lose. You're not happy because you won. And there's a big difference. And that's definitely where this team is at right now. That no one really seemed happy with that win last night, but you know, just relief that they didn't lose again.
Yeah, I think relieved is definitely a much better word than reassured after that game. I would not say reassured. Teal Forever on Twitter says, can we get Carles the sports psychologist from Ted Lasso or any other sports psychologist? I'm assuming this is referencing what we were talking about earlier, the yellow cards and the frustration he has with the referees that take him out of the game.
Yeah, I mean, not to like make light of the importance of sports psychologists, but like there is a better way to get your anger out and directing it at the referee, who is the sole person on the field that can decide that, you know, you're no longer participating in this game, is not the way to do it. Yeah. But I don't think it's going to be, you know, this Ted Lasso, hey, let's all just stand around in a circle and talk about how much we love each other nonsense. It's going to have to be like, bring him in a room, sit him down and tell him like it is. You know, a bit more of a Jose Mourinho to Danny Rose approach than Ted Lasso to everyone that he's ever met in his fictional life.
I agree with you there. Teal Forever also brings up a serious and important comment that I don't know that you or I are going to be able to solve. But he says, I realize America isn't always a shining example on this, but what can we do to stop visiting teams/fans from being racist and homophobic? This is getting ridiculous. Was there an incident at this last game that I didn't hear about? I don't know if I missed something or if this is talking about other games.
Oh, I didn't. I mean, I haven't heard anything come out from this game, but
maybe this is a reference to the New York Red Bulls Academy team. I believe it was the Red Bulls that walked away from a game because of one of the teams they were playing making racist and homophobic, I think, comments. I think that must be a comment that's teams, not fans, but yeah, he says teams and fans.
Those are kids playing in a tournament game. And I don't have any solutions at all to, I certainly don't think that Sean and I are in a position to try and solve the world's, you know, problems with racism or xenophobia or homophobia or any phobia at all, really. But look, I mean, this is a worldwide problem. It happens all over the place. You know, it happens in Britain. It happens in Europe, South America, North America. You know, it happens all over. And, you know, you might think that, you know, youth soccer is not a toxic level, is not a place where something like this would happen. But anyone that has spent any time at youth soccer, I'm sorry, no one is surprised to hear that something like this has happened. The things that come out of people's mouths at youth soccer games every single weekend are they're disgusting. Whether it's racism, whether it's, you know, abusing a player because you don't like them, throwing abuse at the coach, trying to start fights with other parents, it's pretty pathetic behavior. And unfortunately, this is not just the country, but the world that we live in.
I think when it's coming directly from players at the youth soccer level, if that's really what happened, that should be a forfeit. You know, they should end the game, and that team should lose. You know, it's,
yeah, but where does that behavior come from?
Well, that's the bigger problem, right? That's the underlying issue.
You're just mimicking adults, right?
Yeah, it's like, right. Well, and then the other thing too is that, just to not get too far off topic, but if we're talking about how CONCACAF has approached this, when we've seen the homophobic chants that have happened against the U.S. and their U.S.-Mexico games in particular, that clearly isn't working. By pausing the game for the team when their team is losing, it seems to solve nothing. So I don't know what the answer is, but that doesn't seem to be the right answer. I think there needs to be more serious consequences, like making Mexico play more games without fans in the stands or something like that, if that's the type of incident you're talking about.
Yeah, the only way to clean it up at the professional level, would just be bans. Or kick them out of something. Just tell them, look, this is how it's going to go. If this happens, your next home game, no fans. If it happens again in the next tournament qualification, you get no home games. If it happens again, you know, the next tournament after that, you're not invited, you don't play. That's the only way that it would ever – if people that are in a position to lose money start losing money over fan behavior, then something will change. But if there's no monetary conflict, then nothing's going to happen, because that's the other problem that the world that we live in has, is that everything revolves around money.
Agreed. last comment through the Twitter DMs. I should have brought this one up sooner. I apologize. I ran out of time to organize my comments the way I wanted to. But this one is back to Porter's guaranteed comment. Jose Franchino Gino says, obviously thrilled that they won, but find Porter's backtracking on his guarantee comment completely cowardly. I think we both agree with that. He keeps saying it when it was, he keeps saying it was taken out of context, but it was such a direct statement. Also agree with that. He says, maybe in the moment he wasn't expecting to say it at that point in time, but regardless, the cat is out of the bag at that point. A throwaway comment isn't anything that you tack on a promise to. This is at the very end of an interview that he went completely out of his way to say. He intentionally did it. I generally have no problem with him going all in, but don't gaslight the entire fan base because you got scared from the consequences of what you said. I think that is a very good comment. I don't know that I have much to add because I pretty much agree with it.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. It's like, exactly. Why are you backing away from it? You said it. You know you said it. And if you listen to the recording, I can't even think of a relatively nice word for the for midday talk radio show hosts. Those two clowns were perfectly happy to wrap up and end the segment because they don't care about soccer and neither does their audience. And no one even understands why they do this stupid interview in the first place. I hope Caleb, by the way, isn't – I hope someone, like, clued him in. Like, and he's not, like, naively thinking that those two clowns actually care about soccer because they definitely don't. And neither does their audience and neither does that station as a whole, really. Honestly, if I was him, he should just stick to what Bruce did. From what I understand, Bruce just went in there and just gave short answers and they would talk to him about golf and, like, I don't know. It's like, look, man, like, those – who is it? Zolak and some other guy that just talks nonsense for a living? Like, they don't care about soccer, right? Like, they were ready to wrap the interview up and he still kept going and he threw that in there at the end. It's like – Just odd. And then, yeah, it is. Look, I don't want to use the word that you use, but, like, you make a statement and you back down from it 24 hours later. Like, what do you think people are going to think of you?
Yeah, nothing for me to add to that one. Tom, any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Just look, I mean, there's still, you know, there's still a lot of things that need to improve for this team in two ways. You know, one, If results are going to continue to, you know, bring points on a regular basis so they can try and turn the season around and make the playoffs. But also from an entertainment perspective, you know, it's we don't just scoreboard watch. The people that actually go to the games or watch the away games on TV, you know, we're not doing this and taking our Saturday nights and spending lots of money to just get 3 points. If all we cared about was the 3 points, we could just check the score on FootMob and just look at the standings and there'd be no need to watch the games. So the results, yeah, okay, a little bit better. But as far as the entertainment value, you know, the entertainment value of this team is pretty abysmal. So I really, really hope, but I don't really have any reason to think that things can continue to improve and, you know, we get a more enjoyable team to watch.
Yeah, good points. And as a quick update for everybody, our quick show note for everybody, we will not be doing a podcast after the 10:30 p.m. game at Club America. We are not that crazy. Like most of you, we are moving on to New York City FC. We will see you after that game. I don't know if we'll have some sort of interim podcast. I don't know if there's an interview planned this week, but we will not be doing a podcast after that show. So do not send us your questions after that one, because we are not insane enough to stay up till 12:30 to watch a game and series that is already over and then record a podcast.
just check for injuries from that game. Yeah. And that's it.
I mean, it might be slightly more interesting if you see some guys play that haven't played before and if they actually do something positive, but I wouldn't be holding up my hopes. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean O'Donoghue. Of course, follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads, everywhere else at Revolution Recap. And please rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Be sure to check out our friends over at the Blazing Musket, including Tom. Thanks again for listening to Revolution Recap presented by BetOnline. And we'll be back after the next game, the New York City FC game, not the Champions Cup game. We're forgetting that happens with another podcast.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.